Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Halloween, October 31st. Good afternoon and happy Halloween. Thank you for joining us for an extra spooky edition of the Noon Business Hour. Lots of numbers out today ahead of tomorrow's government jobs report for October. We will have a full breakdown of all the economic data that you need to know coming up in just a couple of minutes. But today is the start of the holiday season. A lot of Christmas stuff already up in many, if not most, stores. Let's talk with Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor, based in New York. The website, retaildoc.com. Bob, thank you for joining us.
Happy New Year. Oh.
I want New Year's creep to start. I mean, I want to start talking about what are you doing New Year's Eve on, like, That's August right. 31st?
That's right. Valentine's. What are we doing for Valentine's? You know, hey, the reality is, if I get your dollar now, I'm going to get it before the other guy does. That's number one. Number two, early shoppers tend to forget they bought stuff. So they will keep buying. So that's there. And if you're any kind of gourmet or food, they're going to eat it up before the holidays anyway. So there's a lot of reasons why people across retail are making sure that you have a happy Christmas.
Now, 4 years ago, I was at Costco at the end of September. And the holiday, the Christmas presents were out. The holiday decorations were out. And in 2020, this was presented as a social distancing measure. If we roll the Christmas stuff out earlier, then the stores will not be crowded, full of people in a pandemic situation come November and December. But that seems like a convenient excuse because the holiday season was starting earlier and earlier, even before 2020.
Well, you know, what's interesting also about this, Rob, is that I used to be a choir director, and I had to program my holiday music in the middle of July. You could never find holiday music except in December. Like, that was it. That's all you could find. So if you're planning for the following year, great, but good luck in March. And now we have a 24/7 of every holiday, anytime you want. There are stores that just sell Christmas stuff all year long, Halloween, you name it, because those are easy splurges, right? They're not a considered purchase, Rob. I don't have to think about it. Oh, isn't that cute? Let's take it.
And
if you go to a Halloween store right now, you won't even find anything because they've already moved on, right?
And then very quickly, Bob, you say on the subject of holiday creep, we talk about Christmas creep. People were talking about Halloween the moment the calendar clicked over to September 1st. So Christmas is not the only holiday that's beginning to spread out across multiple weeks and months.
Yeah, and I think that retailers are leaning more into them. I mean, when Home Depot came out with the whatever 12-foot skeleton a couple years ago, and suddenly people were like, wow, Home Depot, and then Lowe's, and now everyone's got it, and everyone seems to sell something that blows up or, you know, lights up or does something. And it is a competition for your dollar, but it also makes it a prettier place to shop, doesn't it? I mean, let's look at the other side here, Rob. Isn't it nice to go into a store that looks pretty?
I agree completely. And whether that's right. A Christmas tree or a 30-foot skeleton, it's in the eye of the beholder. Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, we'll take a look at the redevelopment of an old factory in the Old Town neighborhood.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
An historic building in Chicago's Old Town neighborhood that's now an apartment complex is under contract for a reported $90 million. Let's get the latest from Rachel Herzog, reporter for Crane Chicago Business. Rachel, thank you for joining us today. And we're talking about Cobbler Square, which gets its name because it was once a Dr. Scholl's shoe factory and headquarters before it was converted into a residential property being sold for $90 million. And Rachel, as someone who does not really know is not really an expert on the commercial real estate market or the residential real estate market in Chicago, ritziest neighborhoods, I have to ask, $90 million, is that a lot?
Yeah, and thanks for having me. I think it's and that's an approximate price. The deal hasn't closed yet, and this is, according to sources. But it would be, I think, around $300,000 per square foot, which when you're looking at apartment building sales, which, you know, most people who don't work in commercial real estate might not, that's a pretty strong price point. It kind of speaks to, Old Town and the near north side being a popular neighborhood to live in. You don't see a lot of new development in that area. And also kind of the, historic nature of the building having been owned by, the late real estate billionaire Sam Zell for so long, and just the fact that it hasn't traded in so many decades.
Now, this building was converted from manufacturing to a residential property in the 80s. And so it has a history as an apartment building. And also, Rachel, this does speak to the strength of the apartment market in Chicago, which is a very nice thing to say, especially 4 years after the Chicago apartment market. Its future seemed rather murky because of COVID-19.
Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, we do see people, moving back downtown after, kind of a lot of people leaving with the onset of the pandemic in 2020. But, Northside neighborhoods like Old Town, like Lincoln Park, like Lakeview have seen, their rents spike a lot more than downtown because they're not seeing these new high rises being built. You don't really see a lot of new high rises popping up in Old Town and in Lincoln Park. So for the investors that are buying this building, this is kind of a great opportunity for them to kind of own this property in this area, capitalize on that rental income, and also do a kind of redevelopment plan to update the units and kind of bring this property into the next era.
And then when it comes to just talking about the market rate rental market in Chicago, ones where you're paying the prevailing market rate, it's not affordable housing. When you're getting into that level of renting every month where the rent is like $3,000, $4,000, and you say to yourself, well, why don't you just get a condo and get some equity out of that? Who is the median renter in Old Town?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think Old Town, the average income is pretty high. You have a lot of young professionals. It's a pretty popular place to live, being close to downtown, and being one of these North Lakefront neighborhoods. But I do think something that's, keeping people in the renter pool for longer, even though rents are quite high, like you said, is, these high interest rates making it a little bit harder to buy a condo or buy a house if that's something you might have been wanting to do.
Rachel Herzog, reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Thank you for joining us today, talking about Cobbler Square in the Old Town neighborhood changing hands for $90 million. Coming up next, Chipotle and Starbucks. They'll make some moves to make customers happier.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Both Starbucks and Chipotle making moves in response to complaints from customers. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home is R.J. Hadavi, head of analytical research at the Los Altos, California-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. R.J., thank you for joining us today. And when it comes to Chipotle, it's not exactly rocket science to say if you give them more food, customers will be happy.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, Chipotle has actually done fairly well if you look at visitation trends the last couple of quarters. But I do know that they've dealt with complaints from consumers about inconsistent portion sizes and generally smaller portion sizes. A lot of industry experts have been calling it shrinkflation, smaller portion sizes for the same price. And so I think the management team, interim CEO Scott Boatwright, made it a point to call out that this is a key initiative for the company, really to make sure there's more consistency and bigger portion sizes. I think in this environment, particularly with more consumers being a little bit tight in terms of budgets right now, I think it makes a lot of sense. And, if they feel like they're getting a value for it, we do see visitation trends for these concepts really working out. So I think it's a smart move on the company's part.
And then Starbucks has a new, new person in charge of the company. And it seems like the first strategy is to go back to basics.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, Rob. If you look at kind of what's been going on at Starbucks, visitation trends have been under pressure. The company saw a 10% decline in comparable transactions this past quarter. And really, I think it's the bigger thing is it's visit frequency. They're still pulling in a lot of customers. They're still getting a high number of visitors to locations, but they're just not coming back as often. And I think the new CEO, Brian Niccol, realizes that they really need to be more engaged. And so some of the back to basics and, quitting something as simple as writing the name of the customer on the cup I think go a long way towards that, is really kind of helping to build that relationship with the barista. I think that's something that's been missing out on the consumer side the last couple of years. A lot of it's been automated, that process, that order comes in, a sticker comes out, it's put on a cup. And so some of that human touch has been missed out. But things like, you know, the self-service kiosk where, you know, where the different condiments and different toppings for that, I think that's a smart move too. I mean, one of the big pushes for the company right now is reducing the complexity of the orders and freeing up the baristas to have that time to engage. And so I think a lot of smart moves on the company's part here too. It will take time to turn around, but I think there's a lot of things that they're doing right.
It seems like there's kind of some cross currents though in what customers want, and that is they want the ease and convenience of ordering via the app, but at the same time they want that warm glow of nostalgia to recreate that visit to Starbucks in the 90s or the early 2000s.
You're right, and it is kind of an evolution of the consumer behavior here. If you think about it, the brand Starbucks was built on being this third place, this experience that you go in. And then, you know, last 10 years, we saw the introduction of mobile ordering, which has effectively changed, you know, the way consumers interact with that. We have some consumers looking for that experience, some consumers looking for that convenience. And I think that's the biggest challenge the company's faced the last couple of years. And frankly, that's the biggest challenge ahead for Brian Niccol, is to kind of bridge the gap and make sure that you're satisfying both types of customer well, because when you try to do both at the same time, it's often difficult. You do neither, right? So I think that's going to be the key challenge for the company in the years ahead.
RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at Los Altos, California-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. Still ahead in Technology Thursday, there's danger lurking in artificial intelligence-powered chat bots. We'll talk about that next.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
This is Mike Krauser. A majority of city council members want the mayor to do the right thing, as they say, and remove the Board of Education president.
Next week's election triggering anxiety in a lot of people. It's Technology Thursday. There's concern that children are being manipulated by AI chatbots. The government jobs report for October will be released tomorrow. We'll get a preview. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. The Dow is down 201 points. The NASDAQ is down 441. The S&P 500 is down 85. 65 degrees right now at O'Hare with light rain. It's 1231, topping our news at the half hour. A majority of the Chicago City Council members now want to see the removal of Mayor Johnson's new Board of Education president, the Reverend Mitchell Johnson, because of anti-Semitic and pro-Hamas comments.
Those members include Bill Conway, Pat Dowell, and Nicole Lee.
I mean, first of all, I was speaking out against him when I found out he was disbarred in the state of Ohio for misuse of client funds. And the vile anti-Semitic things he has said online, we need to remove him from that position.
I question the extent to which he was vetted, and he knows what he should do.
I don't know how someone who has the immense responsibility of leading the Chicago Board of Education can look out for all children in the school system when it's clear what his views are.
Also, all three, like many of their colleagues, are leery of a $300 million property tax increase. They were at an early voting site on the South Side. Mike Krauser, News Radio, 105.9 WBBM.
Many people are on edge as we approach Election Day.
7 in 10 Americans who responded to a poll by the Associated Press and the Nork Center for Public Affairs Research say they're feeling anxious or frustrated about the 2024 presidential campaign. Only one-third say they feel excited. Even though the 2020 election happened during a deadly pandemic, some voters say they're even more anxious now than they were 4 years ago. About 80% of Democrats say they're anxious about this election, up slightly from around 75% in 2020. A little more than 66% of Republicans say they're anxious about this election, compared to 60% of Republicans in 2020. Donna Water, Washington.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are lower. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial, based in New York. Art, thank you for joining us today. And I'm going to start off here with the toughest question of the interview. You know, brass tacks right off the blocks, Art, and that is, do you dress up your dogs for Halloween?
That's such a great question, Rob. And I've been thinking about that, you know, for weeks now, and the answer is enthusiastically yes. So they're going to be Pirates this year, and the neighborhood better look out.
Good, good. I hope they like it too. So let's dive into some of the uncertainty surrounding the election. We had that report saying there's a great deal of anxiety. The market doesn't like uncertainty. And would the market accept a clear and unequivocal win one way or the other just because they want to know what direction it's going?
Yeah, I think that unambiguously a yes, Rob. I think that the anxiety around the election oftentimes has more to do with the unknown. And the unknown is not just who's going to be the next president of the White House, but who is actually going to, what's the makeup of Congress going to look like? And that's probably more important than the decision about the next administration. And I say that because the market does best when we have some separation here, when we have a divided Congress or neither side has a clean sweep and run of the table. And that's been historically correct. If that's what the outcome is next week, I think the markets will breathe a sigh of relief and say no major changes are likely going to be instituted that disrupt the economy, whether it's, you know, on fiscal policy or regulation. So to the extent that that's the optimal outcome, that is probably the most likely outcome as well.
Tech is really tumbling today, and that seems to be driving some of the sell-off. This is because of disappointing revenue guidance at not only Microsoft or and Meta as well, the Facebook and Instagram parent company. Let's look under the hood. What are the troubles at Microsoft and Meta in the third quarter?
Yeah, interesting. There was nothing wrong with the third quarter. They both had blockbuster reports. But unfortunately, when you're a mega-cap technology company and priced for perfection, you really have to deliver on three boxes. You need to beat on earnings, you need to beat on revenues, and you have to up your guidance. And in both cases, the guidance wasn't increased enough to satisfy investors. So, you know, remember, you know, these are two of the Mag 7 stocks. They've done quite well on a one-year basis and a two-year basis, and clearly, you know, priced for some great revenue growth. So not delivering that revised guidance is where the disappointment comes in, and it overshadows what was a terrific quarter for both companies. And that was unlike what we saw with Alphabet, which is Google's parent, which did all three of those things. A significant beat. They beat on earnings, beat on revenues, and raised their guidance. Unfortunately, Meta and Microsoft didn't fall into that bucket.
It seems like in the world of tech, especially these gigantic names that have been high flyers, it's been entirely on the potential of AI. And what happens when if that potential doesn't necessarily match the reality?
Well, we know there are already companies that are actually monetizing artificial intelligence and continue to spend billions of dollars to roll out their large language models. So those companies certainly incorporate Microsoft and Alphabet. But the biggest winner thus far in this AI revolution has been NVIDIA, because everybody needs their chips to generate that compute power to run these large language models. So, you know, to the extent that it's early days, we don't know what the revenue opportunity is. We know it's larger than what's present in front of us now. I think it's going to be very large, but it likely the monetization will be frustratingly slow until everybody starts to pick up speed here.
And then lastly, for the Fed watchers, we do have a policy meeting next week. And have the Fed's preferred house organs, have they tipped whether or not we're getting an interest rate cut next week, or is that still a mystery?
Well, I would tell you that the Fed's kind of in a precarious position here. They cut by 50 basis points, and consensus now is that they'll cut by 25 basis points, but the darn economic data continues to be better than expected. Inflation's come down a whole lot faster than anticipated. We just saw the personal consumption expenditure, PCE, the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, came in today in better fashion than it had been guessed at. GDP is certainly running nice at 2.8% in the third quarter. Unemployment's at 4.1%. We'll learn more about that tomorrow. But I would say the Fed right now is in a place where they'd like to get to a Fed funds rate that is not stimulative, but is not restrictive. So they've got some more room to run here. They'll likely cut 25 basis points, and they'll likely do that again in December.
Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, there are some scary situations for kids tied to chatbots powered by AI.
It's because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Mental health professionals are expressing deep concern about the potential impact that artificial intelligence intelligence chatbots can have on children. In some cases, it can be very dangerous. We're joined by Matt Wren, tech expert and founder of VRAR Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. And for those of us who are uninitiated, who may not be familiar entirely with AI chatbots that are aimed at children or maybe students, how can we spot these chatbots in the wild?
Thanks for having me on again, Rob. I mean, a chatbot is really, at the end of the day, not that different from just going to ChatGPT and chatting with ChatGPT. The only difference is that the chatbot that you might be talking with from someone like the character AI or a replica, it may be sort of trained to respond like a certain character that you already know. So somebody from a movie or a Marvel superhero or the other thing that you could say about a chatbot, too, is that they're programmed to have a memory. So they're going to remember what you said. They were going to remember your conversation, and they're going to kind of learn your patterns and to a certain degree reflect those back to you. But there's lots of them. They're all out there. And at the end of the day, you know, saying a chatbot or an AI agent, if you want to use that other term, it's very similar as sort of like one contained conversation with like ChatGPT.
And these chatbots, as they learn your patterns and remember details about your life, we're starting to see that people are developing a relationship or at the very least a rapport with them.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that movie Her, where people are, you know, starting to actually have greater relationships with an AI bot than they would be with, you know, they're almost separating themselves from real humans. And that is part of the danger. Part of the danger is that, you know, these AI characters are trained to respond like humans. They're trained to mimic human emotions. They're trained to respond to what you're saying. And in doing that, you're going to run into the issue of people, you know, especially younger kids, not necessarily being able to know the difference.
Now, a lot of the issues that we talk about as far as kids and tech are concerned is that this is not something that's entirely new in their life. There are other ways in which they can form virtual relationships with other people or other entities. There's chatting on video games. There's social media. There's TikTok. And this just seems to be one more thing that's being entered into the equation. And what are some of the downsides that we're seeing of people developing relationships with these AI agents?
I mean, the real downside is just not necessarily being able to distinguish the difference between a human relationship and an AI relationship. So, you know, as you mentioned just now, there have been problems in the past with kids with social media. You know, bullying happens with kids overreact and they sort of, you know, jump on the social media and they think that what is reflected in social media is very reflective of real life. They also might have those same types of responses to a chatbot. So, you know, from a parent's perspective, you really need to monitor what your kids are doing because a kid could be in a long-term conversation, if you want to call it a relationship, almost a relationship, because, again, kids can't necessarily separate. So they might form emotional, you know, reactions to what a chatbot is telling them, not necessarily distinguishing between this chatbot and a real human. And that's where some of the dangers come into play.
Now, what are some of these chatbot platforms that could be addictive? Like Character AI is one such name. What are some of the other companions out there that are raising some eyebrows?
Yeah, so Character AI is a good one to talk about because, again, there are different characters that you can chat with at Character AI that are trained to be, you know, or react like characters that you might know. So you know, characters from a movie or characters from a comic book or a TV show. So you'll be interacting with a chatbot that's going to seem like a character that you already know from, again, TV or the movies. There's another one called Replica. Replica is actually trained to almost be in a relationship with you. So it's trained to respond to you like a partner would in a relationship. There's some other ones like Nomi and Kindred that I've heard of. I honestly haven't interacted with many of them too much. I've played a little bit with Character AI. But I'm very familiar with creating AI agents. I've trained, you know, an agent to help me with development tasks, software development. So it's not all that different from a chatbot there. But again, the different AI agents will react differently, and they'll kind of take on a character that you sort of tell them to take on. That's what they're doing. They're just reacting to what you tell them.
Matt Wren, tech expert and founder, VRAR Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, a preview of tomorrow's big government jobs reported.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Tomorrow's big government jobs report will be the economic headliner. Joining us with the preview is Gary Kaltbaum, President Kaltbaum Capital Management in Orlando. Find him online, GaryK.com. Gary, thank you for joining us today. And first off, tomorrow's government jobs report for the month of October is going to be a little bit different compared to previous months because it's 1 week earlier than the typical schedule.
Yeah, and you know, Rob, you're using the term government jobs number, and that is my big worry. The amount of government now is just absolutely skyrocketed as far as the spending and the jobs also. And I am just wondering, and I try to keep positive, whether this is skewing a lot of things into the election. I gather we'll know in the months ahead, but I can tell you this, and I wish I was making this up. In the last month, they added $500 billion to our debt. When they signed the Fiscal Responsibility Act last year, we've run over $4 trillion of debt. So whatever they're doing it quite well. And I'm just wondering if a lot of the GDP and a lot of things we're seeing is coming right out of that place called D.C. While we're working our tails off, they keep, battling against us. I hope I'm wrong, but this is coming straight out of the Congressional Budget Office.
Well, this brings up a very interesting point about how you see a great deal of divergence between the ADP, the private payroll report that comes out the Wednesday before the government jobs report that comes out. And of course, the ADP number exceeded expectations, and that measures private employment. And the government report measures all employment, including public sector jobs. So what can we expect tomorrow from the Department of Labor?
I don't think we're going to see anything bad. I've always said leading up to the election, it seems like everything's okay. And look, the job market has stayed pretty tall, a little bit of softness in the last 6 to 9 months, but nothing untoward. My big worry longer term is the debt that's in the system, that if we ever do lose the job market, but so far so good, let's hope it stays that way, because a person without a job is not a good statistic.
And when it comes to the job market at large, it seems that the other question outside of just the number of new jobs that are added each month and whether previous months will be revised upward or downward is, have we gone from the Great Resignation, where there was a great deal of volatility in the job market, to the Great Stay, where businesses are happy with the talent they have and they're not really in the mood to add to that?
Yeah, and what I am noticing is the amount of job opens, as you say, is down. I don't see that as a big deal. I think that is more or less the cycle. For me, the big thing going forward, are we going to continue to be able to add 200,000 jobs a month, which is a good number, but I'm talking about good jobs and not just any job and not just the continued growth of government jobs. I think that's going to be meaningful as we move into the next administration. And again, I'm a big believer we're doing great. I think all of us work very hard to do better for ourselves and family. The two words, upward mobility, is still at hand. And as long as that's around, I think we'll be in good stead. I'm just worried about what's emanating from that place. And I gather we'll know soon enough.
Gary Kaltbaum, President of Kaltbaum Capital Management in Orlando, thank you for joining us today.